If you'd like to listen to our podcasts without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, enhanced show notes for select shows, and more. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or the first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code ECLIPSE to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code ECLIPSE. Thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to DSR Daily, the show in which we try to tell you a little bit about what's going on in the world, talk a little bit about what it means. I'm David Rothkopf, joined as ever by Chris Cotnor. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent. And Riley Fessler, how are you today, Riley?
Pretty good.
Chris, what are you starting off looking at?
I'm looking at your boy, Mike Johnson. After months of delay, House Speaker Mike Johnson recently presented a strategic, I can't even say this with a straight face, a strategic plan aiming to balance internal Republican disputes by segmenting aid into four separate bills for Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and other foreign policy demands such as seizing Russian assets and possibly banning TikTok. The plan, which departs from a previously passed Senate bill by potentially excluding humanitarian aid focused on Gaza, has been met with mixed reactions within his party. Far-right members are particularly upset over the absence of border security measures linked to foreign aid, a condition some deem essential. David, what I'd really like to know is, if they couldn't agree on one bill, how are they going to get four bills through the House?
Well, I think the big obstacle to some of these bills was getting them to the floor. If they can get to the floor, there'll be a majority of people in the House that'll support them. The problem is the far right people. You know, they have their big brains like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who have very strong foreign policy opinions. She doesn't think we should give any aid whatsoever to Ukraine. Of course, some of them are talking about this, tying it to border security. But of course, the head of the party, Donald Trump, said, no, I don't want a deal on border security. So it looks like, you know, if he's posted these things, this is this quote strategy yesterday, which was Monday, after seeing Donald Trump on Friday, then you have to conclude that essentially what he's doing has been sanctioned by his holiness in Mar-a-Lago. And so I think what you'll get is a bunch of separate bills, and they'll pass. Israel will pass. Taiwan will pass. Ukraine will pass. Ukraine will probably be alone as opposed to a traditional aid package, and there may be some provisions in there about, quote, accountability, although, of course, there are accountability provisions in all our aid. I don't even want to get you started here on the TikTok thing because, you know, I know you have strong feelings on that, but I do too. I'll just tell you, I think banning TikTok is ridiculous and reactive. If you're banning TikTok because you don't want foreign governments to have access to your data, don't use your phone, right? Because they're going to get it any way they want to get it. If you're banning TikTok because you think their algorithm is going to direct your eyeballs in a certain direction, which might, suit the, Chinese government, well, then you better not use Twitter, and you better not use Facebook, and you better not use Google, and you better not use any place, because they all have algorithms and there's all sorts of political subtexts in them, whether it's Twitter's, which is, sort of hard right, or whether it's, you know, Facebook's, which, you know, sort of cuts out politics because it wants to appear to be impartial. You know, this is a time to have a law that says this is how we protect our privacy. And this is a time to acknowledge that free speech extends to algorithms and that people need sort of truth in algorithms. They need to know what the priorities are. It's not a time to target just one because we're in the middle of a red scare. Could pass, though. And all of this could trigger a recall motion on Mike Johnson, although I suspect if he does what he said he's going to do with the aid packages, Dems might protect him. I don't know. It's certainly going to be an interesting week because, you know, all of these folks in the Congress are so unused to getting anything done, they might, like, you know, pull a muscle here. You know, I mean, you know, it's just, you know, anathema for this Congress to even try to get anything done. But the consequences are great, and we'll obviously follow real closely. Riley?
Two Palestinians were fatally shot by Israeli settlers in the West Bank under disputed circumstances amidst a reported violent clash following a Palestinian's attack on an Israeli shepherd. The Israeli military says that the gunfire killing the men was not from their soldiers. You know, take that as you will. Over 400 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces in the West Bank and East Jerusalem since October 7th, and a recent wave of settler mob violence in Palestinian villages was sparked by the murder of a 14-year-old Israeli. Prime Minister Netanyahu called for calm, but very obviously did not actually condemn the mob violence in these Palestinian villages, and his call for calm has been juxtaposed with criticism of Israeli inaction against settler violence, especially since October 7th. And the U.S. has expressed alarm over the escalating aggression towards Palestinian civilians. And I think this is just an underwatched aspect of this conflict. Obviously, rightfully, a lot of attention has been on Gaza. But, I mean, 400 Palestinians being killed since October 7th is a pretty high number.
Yeah, and Palestinians are killed there all the time. You know, Netanyahu calling for calm is ridiculous, and Israelis see through it since, you know, the people he's got in his cabinet involved in these things include literal, actual terrorists like Ben-Gvir or extremists like Smotrich you know, they have an agenda, and their agenda is use settlers to clear out Palestinians, to make it impossible for the West Bank to be part of any kind of Palestinian state or solution. Of course, Gaza has demonstrated to the world that the only way to get peace here is to revisit that idea and find a way forward. And so we're, you know, in a race with time, because what they want to do is they want to push Palestinians out of key pieces of land as quickly as they can, so that in the hopes that, you know, that wouldn't have to, you know, ever be given back. It's a terrible situation. And you're right. You know, it's another one of the complexities of this where the world has to get its brain around how horrific Israel's handling of Gaza has been, and that a solution is needed there. How horrific its treatment of Palestinians in the West Bank has been, while also saying, well, we want to protect the Israeli people from the aggression of Iran. You know, it's hard to imagine a situation that is more complicated than this, it's the one we have to deal with. Chris?
As we reported yesterday, jury selection began in the Trump trial, the Stormy Daniels trial, in which he was accused of paying Stormy Daniels $130,000 for her silence. The jury selection process seems to be going slow, as 60 of the 96 jurors were dismissed because they had biases, which aligns with, I saw a video report on AP News this morning that reported that two-thirds of Americans do not believe that what Trump did was a crime, though I believe a third of them thought it was immoral. And while I don't, I mean, while that does have, has no impact on the case itself, because the law is the law, I do think it's going to impact the ability for both sides to get jurors that they're ultimately going to be happy with. And in the case of Trump, I doubt he'll ever be happy with any of the jurors selected. I would expect this process to go on for the rest of the week, to be honest.
Well, it may. There's certainly plenty of jurors from which to choose, and they will get to a jury. And this is just expected. This is what happens in these cases. You know, meanwhile, Trump yesterday railed against, you know, having to do this, used more delay tactics, just sent Ryan saying, well, let me get time off so that I could go to my kid's high school graduation, even though literally he's never gone to the high school graduation of any of his other children. And also, let me have time off so I can go to the Supreme Court hearing on this important case, even though he's never gone to a Supreme Court hearing. And this angered the judge quite a bit for reasons that are absolutely understandable. And the judge seemed to be sort of taking a tough line on this, although he also postponed for a week taking any decision on Trump's violation of the gag order, which he wouldn't have done if Trump were not a president. You know, it's going to be interesting. To me, the case is one thing. How Trump handles the case is another thing. He's just not good at this. He's going to be asked to sit for 6 weeks in a crappy courtroom in Manhattan, in a place where he is not in charge, where nobody's actually listening to him, where he can't actually speak. He thinks he can use this, you know, to develop a campaign narrative that he's not being prosecuted, but that he's being persecuted. But of course, there's plenty of reason to conclude that that's not what the case is, and it's unlikely that this case would have been brought if they didn't think they could win it. There was a really, really, I don't think I've ever said this on any of our podcasts, but there was a really good segment on Rachel Maddow last night that explained why this case was a developing federal case until Donald Trump told Bill Barr to kill it. And it was absolutely fascinating because it goes right to not only obstruction of justice, but also Trump's view of the law and how he might treat it should he actually end up as president again. So lots to watch here. My guess is this trial has a bigger impact than people thought it would, and that a lot of that impact is going to be due to reactions to the trial from Trump rather than things that are actually happening in the courtroom.
Riley?
Well, in other trial news, the U.S. Supreme Court is set to closely examine the violent events of January 6th for the first time as it hears arguments in a case that could potentially reverse numerous felony convictions related to the Capitol riot beginning today. The case focuses on whether the broad application of the felony obstruction charge by the Justice Department, which stemmed from actions such as ransacking the Capitol and assaulting police officers, is valid for those accused of obstructing Congress's certification of the 2020 election results. The outcome is expected by the end of June, and it could, of course, not only affect the hundreds of January 6 rioters charged, but also intersect with charges against former President Donald Trump.
You know, every time the Supreme Court grapples with a big bill with big implications, one's heart goes up into one's mouth because, you know, it's quite possible that they do something that's completely political and has nothing to do with the law. And we never would have said that about the court in the past, or seldom would have said it about the court in the past. But here we've seen it enough times. If they were to throw out, cases that are based on this legal reasoning, that would affect many, many, many of the people who've been convicted for January 6th, and send a message that theirs was a wrongful prosecution, and this will embolden them going forward. We'll watch this closely. There's other cases to watch closely, including the possibility of a decision soon on a case regarding gerrymandering in South Carolina. Same thing. Gerrymandering is, clearly a way to sort of put a thumb on the scale in terms of electoral outcomes. But in some cases, they have allowed it to go ahead. And that's why in some states, we've got very sort of screwed up systems where Democrats make up the majority of people in a state, and a minority, Republicans, sometimes a substantial minority, end up with more seats in the state legislature or in Congress, because the districts are drawn in such a way that they give an advantage to one side or the other. So we'll have to keep an eye on that one too. Chris?
The body of a fourth Baltimore bridge collapse victim was recovered. This comes on the heels of the announcement of multiple investigations to determine culpability. This, of course, was Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge. And in terms of the investigations, there's a criminal investigation that's been spearheaded by the FBI and the U.S. Coast Guard, focusing on possible negligence by the ship's crew. At Baltimore City, officials and lawyers representing the victims' families are pursuing legal actions against the ship's owner, Grace Ocean, and its manager, Synergy Marine. This is going to be something that is in the news for quite some time. You guys are obviously in Washington. I'm here in New Jersey. But I can imagine that, the cleanup efforts and, the recovery efforts have been probably pretty slow.
Well, they've been working at it hard. It's been a priority of the U.S. Federal government. Obviously the city of Baltimore is paralyzed right now. The harbor is a big part of its economy, and moving forward on getting the cleanup completed enough that ships can once again, traverse the harbor, is kind of the highest priority. It's good to see the federal Department of Justice taking a look at the potential criminal issues involved in how we got to this. Does make one wonder why some cases get picked up and others don't. There's been a lot of talk about Boeing, and I don't see them being brought to task for some of the big high toll crashes that have taken place because of clear problems with some of their planes. We'll have to follow this one closely. If you're interested in things like infrastructure, transportation, the U.S. economy, how all this works together, where we're going from here with potential Biden administration in terms of those issues. Next week in Washington, we have a roundtable with Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg. We're doing this with the New Republic again. And if you would like to see if you qualify for an invitation, give us an email, and we'll take a look and see if you're somebody that we might be able to extend an invitation to. It's an invitation only event. We do these every couple of months in Washington at the cabinet level, they're always highly fascinating. And of course, Secretary of Transportation Buttigieg is one of the smartest, most insightful rising political leaders in America, and definitely somebody you want to come and hear. So I just flag that for you and suggest that you also listen to the other podcasts that we've got coming, including a book podcast we've got later today that is going to be absolutely fascinating. All the usual stuff, which is at thedsrnetwork.com. So go look for it and see what you like and give it a listen. Until then, thank you, Chris. Thank you, Riley. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And bye-bye.